Thanks for listening to Stokely and Zach On Demand. Before Zach tells us who is moonwalking in the Hall of Fame today, have you subscribed to our podcast? Subscribe everywhere you get your podcast or at 1043thefan.com.
It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 1043 The Fan.
I want to get back into the conversation we were just having with Spilly and how baseball's gone about this at this specific juncture in time. And by the way, that might be the least of their problems, professional baseball, because there is a labor fight that could be on deck and stop the whole sport. We'll get back to it in just a couple minutes. But the Athletic went through, the Athletic.com went through all 32 NFL teams. James Merrillat fell in for Stoke today. They listed each squad's 2021 MVP. The selector of this MVP is a good buddy of mine, Nick Kosmeyer, who covered the Denver Nuggets for years, did a great job now on the Broncos beat for the Athletic. He said Bradley Chubb. Nick went on to say, quote, the number five pick in the 2018 draft earned his first Pro Bowl honor last season, and that came on the heels of an ACL injury he suffered four games into the 2019 campaign. Another year removed from the injury, and with Von Miller returning to command opposite side attention after missing all of 2020 with an ankle injury, Chubb should be primed for his best season, end quote. What do you think of it, James?
I think it's a little bit wishful thinking in terms of how Bradley Chubb is going to perform. I say that based on the fact of in 20 games with Vic Fangio as his head coach slash, you know, essentially the defensive coordinator, in those 20 games, he's had 8.5 sacks. So he had one before he got injured in 2019. I think it was 7.5 last year. So he's been fine, but hasn't been great. He also had the ankle injury at the end of last season, had to get it scoped or worked on here, a month or so ago. So I think the injury questions make that, you know, boy, I think that's being optimistic that he's gonna be better than he was a year ago, at least significantly, because I think he'd have to be significantly better than he was last season to be the MVP of this team. He was fine last year. He made the Pro Bowl, but come on, he didn't even lead the team in sacks.
Right.
That's a little bit of a silly thing to kind of hang your hat on that he made the Pro Bowl.
He was tied 26th in the league for sacks.
Right. I guess I would say this. If Bradley Chubb is the MVP of this team, I don't think they have a very good year. Because I think there are other guys that can have a much bigger impact. He mentioned one, Nick did, in the write-up there. I think if Von Miller comes back and is anywhere near the Von of old, well, that makes so many players on that defense so much better that I think that would make him the MVP.
Well, hold on a second. What's more likely here, that Von Miller in 2021 is going to regain the 2015 form, that he's just going to be a game wrecker at age 32 years old, or is it more likely that your fifth overall pick, who's in his mid-20s, the year after a healthy season with the following the ACL, could explode on the scene? I think the latter is more likely.
I'll bet on Von Miller all day long in that scenario. If Von Miller 2 years ago was better than Bradley Chubb was last year, he just was, and everybody talked about how he was washed up and, you know, he's walking on some plays. I mean, he was better in 2019 than Bradley Chubb was a year ago when Chubb made the Pro Bowl. Chubb had the really good rookie year statistically, but I think if you and I went back and watched all those sacks, at least a handful of them were non-impact, right? They weren't on 3rd and 7 to force the other team off the field. They were, you know, in garbage time, or they were the guy fell down and he just, you know, touched him on the head and got credited for the sack. Like, they were just those kind of plays. I don't see that, but I think Von Miller, if Von Miller comes back and has a 10-sack season, I think this defense does have a chance to be top 10, top 5, like people talk about.
Wait, hold on. James.
If he doesn't, they have no shot. If Von Miller isn't great, then I don't think this defense has any chance of being top 10.
Hold on. If Von Miller's not at 10 sacks, my alarms are going off.
Sure,
is that where we're at with Von?
Well, that if he has 10 sacks, Broncos, he better be 10 sacks.
Bradley Chubb has had more than 10 sacks once his rookie year. That was it.
No, and I'm saying Bradley Chubb better have 10 sacks.
He's at 8.5 in the last 20 games. So, okay, pick a number. Pick a number for Vaughn. Let's, 10's probably
low. Hold on a second. They asked Vaughn Miller to take a pay cut. Vaughn said, no, cut me. I'll go play somewhere else. And the Broncos said, just kidding. We're going to pay you the 6th highest mark in the sport.
Yeah, that was when George Payton blinked, part of his, you know, home run offseason.
If we're talking about paying him that number, and we're talking about, 10 sacks as the threshold, no, for both of these guys, Von Miller better be at 10 sacks. Paying him, if he's at 10 sacks, what are you paying him, $2 million a sack? And Bradley Chubb was your 5th overall pick. Both of those guys. And it's not all about sacks. We're going to have to use our brain and football acumen to, you know, I'm not reducing their seasons just down to a number. But when you're in the backfield as much as these guys should, they should both be double-digit sack guys.
Okay. I don't necessarily disagree with that, but I think from a realistic standpoint, I mean, you know, if you've got your training camp story bingo card, you can already, you know, mark one of the squares off because we've already had the story. You know, will Von Miller and Bradley Chubb combine for 30 sacks? Like, I've heard that same story for a decade. It was Von and Elvis, and then it was Von and DeMarcus Ware. It's always this preposterous number. Like, do you think they're going to combine for 30 sacks?
No.
And each of those guys is going to average 15? Like,
no.
That's silly.
No, but no. Yes, I agree with you. That is lofty. I thought that conversation was more in bounds following the 2018 season. When they combined for 26.5. Like, I thought that conversation was very in bounds, right? Von Miller was 5th in the league, with 14.5.
40. That was the number we heard at training camp that year. 40.
Well,
because it always gets silly and it always gets preposterous. But 30 would have been in bounds.
Yeah. I was going to say 30 would have been, you go north of that but whatever. But you could kind of use your imagination then because Chubb had just walked in the league. Like, we were 2/3 of the way through the NFL season in Chubb's rookie year saying, is he going to break Javon Kearse's rookie sack record, which was, I think, 14.5, and he ended up with 12? So I don't think the conversations were crazy then. I don't think they're necessarily crazy now as long as the goalposts are in the right position. 30, that's too lofty right now. I have to use my imagination too much, particularly with Vaughn at his age. You're going to tell me Vaughn's going to be, 14, 15 sacks? Okay, coming off a year with injury, I gotta overextend myself from an imagination standpoint. I was there a year ago, not necessarily there now, but with Chubb, like, everything should be in bounds with Bradley Chubb. Everything. Whether it's comeback player of the year, 15 sacks, the MVP of this team, it's the 5th overall pick. We gotta remember what this guy was supposed to be.
I get it, but I don't think he's really ever shown us that he's that kind of a player, including the rookie year when he had 12.5 sacks. I think the numbers looked good, but I don't think he was a dominant player by any means. I mean, just off the top of your head, and I got one that comes to my mind. Off the top of your head, what is the big impact game-changing play Bradley Chubb has made in his 3 seasons in Denver?
So I was going to ask you that about his 2019 campaign. I was 2020 campaign. I was going to ask you, do you remember
a
play that changed the game? In 2020 you do?
Yeah. He got the sack on Sam Darnold to end the Jets game.
Oh, yep. Good call.
That was it.
Good call.
On 4th down. And it might not have even been a sack. He might have forced the incompletion or whatever. But he was in the backfield like that entire series.
Nope, you're right. He helped close the game. That's a good call.
That's it. That's all I can come up with during his 3 years, though, including his rookie year. Now that's going back a little bit.
Well, I was going to say that there was some moments there his rookie year. I remember there was a 2-game stretch where he had 5 sacks over 2 games, 3 against the Rams when the Broncos played over the head against a really good Rams team, lost by 3, but he had a trifecta sack game. And then that was when I think that led to the Thursday night game against Arizona where Von Miller very bravely guaranteed that they were going to beat the 1-win Arizona Cardinals. And he had 2 sacks that game. So
I smell a steak bet, though. And here's what I think it is.
You got to pay off the last one before you make a future one.
Hey, I'm not the one that's hard to pin down. I got all kinds of free time, but I do.
You're right.
On a technicality, but I owe you one.
It's not a technicality. Keep going. What's the steak bet? I smell one coming here, too.
Who's going to have more sacks? I'll take Vaughn. You can have Bradley. I'll take Von Miller all day long. You want to give me the guy who showed up last year and looked like he was poised to have a monster season and rededicated himself and went back to training in San Francisco? I mean, it was a disappointing year last year, going 5-11. But at the top of the list was that we didn't get to see what Von Miller was going to do after coming back looking the way he did.
Well, it's you know, part of that conversation why he didn't play is he suffered a freak injury.
Yep.
And it was the offseason where he put a bunch of weight on. Like,
yep.
He looked like an action figure, and that might have been a mistake. And I think by his actions, it might be an admission. Because have you seen Von Miller?
Yeah, he doesn't look like that this year.
He looks like he needs to eat the steak that you and I are betting. I mean, he looks really slim down. That might be best for him.
Well, at least you can find him. Bradley Chubb's over on the rehab field all the time.
Fair. And the most recent thing that popped up is you mentioned it or alluded to it very early in this conversation, the bone spurs that they did not think were going to be an issue. He just had surgery just like a few weeks ago. That is really late in the process if you plan on being 100% at the start of the season, the way that he wasn't last year. If you remember, I was advocating for I'm not saying if you remember what I was advocating, but he was injured in the preseason. And I was saying, man, this guy is so important to this franchise. You might want to consider starting him really slow and not over-obsessing about his availability in game one or game two. I think you should overly obsess about his long-term health. He couldn't get through the last scrimmage of the preseason.
Yeah. I think it's a coin toss on which guy has more sacks, which is why I think it's a good wager.
You know what? Let me think on this for a minute. We will lock this in before the end of the show.
Okay.
We
will. Right. If I
like
get out
this,
of this show with Von Miller as the guy I'm holding a ticket on, I'm skipping down my neighborhood here. It's going to be great.
Okay. We will revisit this conversation. All right. Why is the name of a former All-Pro with Kansas City being associated with the Denver Broncos? We'll fill you in coming up next.
You're listening to Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
Why is the name of a former All-Pro with Kansas City being associated with the Broncos? Not talking about Neil Smith here. The Broncos have already signed up Bobby Massey and Cameron Fleming to shore up the right tackle position, James, and James Merrillat filling in for Brandon Stokely today. But that didn't stop Bleacher Report's Brad Gagnon from saying the Broncos were the, quote, logical choice for Mitchell Schwartz. Huh. Interesting, right? I think we both just did huh at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah, no, that'd be interesting. I mean, I like the Massey and Fleming signings from the standpoint of they're veteran guys that have, proven what they can do in this league, and they didn't come at a huge expense, and you got two of them, right? So you're kind of playing the odds that one of them will pan out. So I'm not down on those moves by George Payton at all, but would Schwartz excite me more? Yeah, absolutely. I think you're getting somebody there that we would know who the starter was if he was on this roster.
Right,
it wouldn't be a debate or one of the questions heading in. They got $29 million of cap space. Might as well put some of it to use. So, sure, I'd be fine with that. That's an upgrade. Anytime you can upgrade your roster at any position without doing long-term impact, negative impact to the salary cap, I'm fine with it. So, sure, that'd be great.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of out of right field for me because I just kind of considered that box checked, not in terms of guaranteed play, but you addressed it, right? And doubly so with Massey and Fleming. But I think you're right. Mitchell Schwartz would be like an emphatic upgrade. The only question is the health, but this guy had been nothing but available throughout his career. He's only going to be 32 years old at a position that it feels like tackles are playing longer into their career, doesn't it?
Yeah. Yeah. It's maybe not quite quarterbacks, but it's getting, mid to late 30s kind of becomes the norm, it almost seems like.
Yeah, it's kind of interesting. But Brad Gagnon of...
I mean, Whitworth looks like Hemingway.
Right. Bleacher Report's Brad Gagnon said, quote, Schwartz didn't miss a single snap in any of the first seven seasons of his career. and didn't miss a start until 2020. He was a first-team All-Pro in 2018. His Pro Football Focus grade of 88 since 2019 ranks fifth among all qualified offensive tackles. In terms of WAR, which is wins above replacement, only two tackles have been more valuable than Schwartz since he entered the league back in 2012. Gagnon calls him still remarkably underrated. And he goes on to say, if he can get past the back problems that plagued him last year, there's little reason to believe he can't excel for several years to come at a position with a long shelf life, end quote.
Well, I think you hit the nail on the head of why it's even more interesting, though. It's not just that it's an upgrade for 2021, which it would be, but you've solved the left tackle position for the next few years with Garrett Bowles. If you could solve the other side, that's a position that, you know, in the last 5 years, it's been middle linebacker, it's been right tackle, and it's been quarterback. That's been the same story year after year after year after year. If you can solve the other side for 3 or 4 years, and that's your bookend with Garrett Bowles, man, that's pretty tempting. Now, there's a big if he bounces back from back surgery.
Right.
Back surgery is always dicey. When you're in your 30s, it's even more so.
Sure.
But if he's healthy, and you can, like I say, can solve that spot for, you know, until 2024, just to pick a year down the road, man, that's pretty intriguing.
It is, at least to take a look at. You know, if you're George Payton, you probably have to sit down and take a long look at this one, if he's even thinking like this. And it's reasonable to believe that he wouldn't be because he's already addressed it. But I just had not heard Mitchell Schwartz's name associated with the Broncos at all, not once, until this article from Brad Gagnon of Bleacher Report. It stopped and made me think a little bit. Interesting. He's still available, so we'll see what ultimately happens with Schwartz, and we'll keep an eye on it. All right, Pro Football Focus is doing their annual countdown of the top 50 players in the National Football League, and two Broncos made the list. But I'm throwing the challenge flag on one of them. I'll tell you why next.
Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan presents Stokely and Zach.
Pro Football Focus is doing their annual countdown of the top 50 players in the NFL, and two Broncos made the list. We'll get to it. I got to get something off my chest before that, though.
Okay.
The penalty kick in hockey, in soccer.
Yeah.
The PK.
Yeah.
Dude.
It's like a layup.
Dude, it is in a sport that is so hard to score. That the finals of these games are oftentimes 1-0, 2-1, 2-0. Very rarely do you even see like a 4-3 or a 4-2. It just oftentimes, like, the over-under on these games are 2.5, okay? It's very, very difficult. You cannot reduce the sport, a mistake within the sport, down to a point-blank kick. Like, I just watched Cristiano Ronaldo put one on the board for Portugal. He's standing like 12 feet away from the biggest goal in all of sports. It looks like a swimming pool. There's one little skinny human being occupying, it almost looks like a cartoon. The one little skinny goaltender is going to try to block Cristiano Ronaldo in a massive goal. It just is the silliest thing that, like, I don't understand it.
Super duper bad.
No, I mean, the only way to stop it is if you guess and dive the right direction.
Correct.
That's it. Right, so you're basically having a 90-minute sporting event come down to a split-second guessing game. No, I'm with you. It's silly. It's silly.
And
but
it's,
was it a penalty that just happened to come at the end of the game, and now they're going to win 1-0? Or are we doing, you know, PKs at the end here?
No. So like, we're a half hour into the game, and I missed what happened to lead to the penalty kick. But regardless, like, I'm just talking about from a fundamental and a philosophical standpoint in a sport that is so hard to register goals, to penalize a team with a point-blank opportunity seems like the most counterintuitive, silliest thing that you could possibly do. It just doesn't make any sense to me.
Yeah, I know. I'm with you. It would be like if a free throw was a layup.
Yes.
Right? Like you just stood under the hoop and Yeah, that would be similar. I don't know what the answer. I mean, moving it back, you don't have to move it back very far and keep the goaltender in, a goalie in there to make it a little bit more of a challenge. It is way too point blank. That I firmly agree with you.
Do what the NFL did. They took a 99.5 percentile kick. They just moved it back. Now it's like 80. Now it's like 77 or whatever it is. And at least it's a little interesting. You don't immediately get up and use the bathroom or go grab another cold one.
Like when the team scores late, it's definitely interesting.
It's very interesting. Do that with soccer. Are you serious? If this is the game, if this is the world's most popular sport and they haven't solved something that is such a logjam in their sport, it just irritates me.
I'm not a soccer basher. I actually enjoy it. I think it's one of the sports, honestly, and this may sound funny, where HDTV has made it so much better.
Yes, yes, great point.
You can see everything. Some of the things you thought were flops when they show the replay, you're like, ooh, yeah, gosh, he did get drilled right in the back of the leg. I mean, it's made the game better, but there are ways to improve it. But soccer guy is like baseball guy. They just, you know, the traditionalists. This is how it was 100 years ago. We can't possibly change it. Okay, well, back then, boxing and horse racing were the two most popular sports, and now they're fringe at best. So, they're stubborn to a fault. They don't want to hear any of our ideas to make their games better.
I just don't understand it. It'd be like putting a tee out in the outfield and see if a major leaguer could swing it into the stands. Like, he can.
Yeah. Just have to hit it out of the infield. That's it.
right. So stupid. Can you tell what side I'm on here, James?
No, I'm with you. I'm with you.
All right.
Have you seen, speaking of that, random baseball, have you seen this team that plays, it's called, I think it's Banana Ball that they call it?
No.
And they have all these quirky rules. And so basically each inning is a frame. And if you win that frame, you get a point, right? So it's first team to win 5 frames out of 9. That's one of the ways they do it. They do like the tiebreaker, which is the pitcher's out there on the mound, the hitter's at the plate. Nobody else is on the field, and wherever he hits the ball, the pitcher has to go run and get it and try and get it back into home plate before the guy runs all the way around the bases. Like,
they just do
some quirky things that they sound silly. I get it, but I like the outside-the-box thinking, right? Like, they probably have 15 of them. I'll find the Instagram story and send it to you. There's probably, like, 15 of these things. If one or two of them sticks and is like, yeah, that's a really good idea, I think it's worth the experiment. That's minor league baseball. It's what you should be doing.
Right. Well, and then that's what the NFL did with the XFL. They were like, this is a really bad product, but you guys do like 2 or 3 things really well, and we're just going to steal them and adopt them for our own.
And it's the reason why the NBA and the NFL have blossomed and other sports haven't is because they're willing to change, right? The three-point line, it was, 1976 or whatever when that was in the introduced and it was back in the ABA. They stole that. They stole that idea and were willing to implement it. So those two sports, if you went back 50 years, an NBA game doesn't look anything like an NBA game 50 years ago. An NFL game doesn't look anything like an NFL game 50 years ago.
Nope.
Baseball, exactly the same. Soccer, exactly the same.
Right. Oh, that's such a good point. And I hate giving you that W, James. You know that, but that is a good point. Okay, we don't have enough time to get to this pro football focus. We will in a second.
One of them made you mad too. I wanted to hear it.
Yes.
We'll get to it.
Yeah, we'll get to it next. Baseball. I said we'd circle back to that conversation. We were talking about it with Ryan Spielborgs, and the Rockies game is going to start in about 20, 30 minutes out there in Seattle, game 2. I think it's Herman Marquez on the mound here. But the crackdown on the sticky stuff in the middle of a season, this has to be filed under one of the silliest things that I can remember. You are fundamentally changing how the most important position is played. Most important position in baseball, much like football, it's the guy who touches the ball in every single play. And these guys have lived an existence of having sticky stuff on their hands. Like, that's just what it's been. And no one has not known that.
Yeah.
There has been no mystery in this. If you want to change it, for sure. I can hear the reasons why you would want to change it, and I probably would agree with you. Because there's just too much control in that baseball, the spin rate, et cetera. It makes sense, especially if you're trying to improve offenses. Makes sense. But to make such a massive fundamental change in the middle of a season, to me, it'd be like in the middle of the NBA season, changing to a women's basketball or something like that.
Because shooting percentages were too high.
Right, right. Yeah. You are switching it up on the fly. You're disassembling the airplane while it's in the air. Guys are getting hurt because of it, because they're just not accustomed to the motions now that they are taking off their pitches and et cetera. It's been outlined by several pitchers. And yesterday I just thought was an embarrassing night for the entire sport. No one cared about the final scores of these games. It was all about the checking for stickiness, reporting from the dugout, check him for stickiness, guys taking off their belts and dropping their pants during the game. About that. That actually happened last night.
I know. Now, there is part of me, and maybe this is, kind of the old PR/marketing guy in me, who looks at this and goes, hey, we're talking about this before we're talking about DeAndre Ayton's dunk, right? So, and that game was what I was paying attention to, but Girardi and Scherzer kind of knocked it off the checklist in terms of things that stood out from last night. So, it is getting baseball some attention. It's for the wrong reasons, but hey, you're getting eyeballs, so that's part of it. But yeah, the changing the rule midstream is ridiculous because you already knew that this was going on. Right? Like if it was a new problem that came out of nowhere, I think it'd be just as foolish to say, well, we can't address it and fix it. We got to wait till the end of the season. It's like, why? If you know this is a problem and it just popped up in the last month or two, solve it. But if you knew this was going on and it's been going on for years, at the start of the season, you knew this was the case. Why now all of a sudden do you decide that you have to fix it and you can't wait a couple of months? That is the silly part of this. It's just, baseball can't get out of its own way though. They really can't, and this is just the latest example of just a silly rule. But I do think it's a problem from the standpoint of there's a reason why pitching has got to the point where it is, where it used to be if a guy was hitting 90, it was big.
Yeah.
And then if somebody hit 100, you were like, woo.
James, you knew how many players in Major League Baseball threw 100. There used to be a number.
Yeah, exactly. Now it's like everybody throws in the high 90s. And part of that is that when you're gripping the ball that well, you have more control over it. You can throw it that hard and you can hurl it. Yeah. So it's an issue. It's why the game has become, it's all about power pitching and it's all about power hitting. That's essentially what it is. So I get why they want to address it. I just don't know why they didn't do it either last offseason or this coming offseason. It's just silly to do it, midstream.
We have to go. So very last thought here, baseball feels like they are a death nail away from being irrelevant as a sport, and the death nail could be coming with another work stoppage. On ESPN.com, yep. Jeff Passan is doing a State of Baseball series, and he asked those in positions of power, okay, around Major League Baseball, how they would characterize the state of labor relations in the sport. I'll give you 5 one-word answers from these are people with positions of power in MLB. Dysfunctional, unfortunate, complicated, tense, and unnecessary. Baseball is headed in a direction that screams work stoppage, and they may be one more of those from being such a far back of 4 out of 4, and maybe being replaced by a sport like soccer.
Well, they were the last league to get back playing during the pandemic because of this stuff. They couldn't figure it out. It goes on and on and on and on, and they never resolve it. The Savannah Bananas, that's the minor league team. They've introduced banana ball. Check it out.
Okay, will do. Pro Football Focus is doing their annual countdown of the top 50 players in the NFL. 2 Broncos made the list, but I'm throwing a challenge flag on one of them. I'll tell you who it is and why coming up next.
It's Stokely and Zach on Sports Radio 104.3 The Fan.
France gets on the board with a penalty kick. James, have I ever told you how much I love penalty kicks in soccer?
Oh, they're so exciting.
Marilyn filling in for Stoke today. And if you're just joining us, I just went on a rant how much I hate the penalty kicks because it happened against the team that I'm pulling for here. Pro Football Focus is doing their annual countdown of the top 50 players in the NFL. 2 Broncos made the list so far. But I'm throwing a challenge flag on one of them. James, you remember this yearly installment, right? Pro Football Focus Top 50? Okay. The first installment of the 50 was counting down from 50 to 21. And presumably they're trying to stretch out the content here. I'm sure either tomorrow or early next week we'll get 20 through 11 and then finally do the top 10. But we have two Broncos, okay? Two Broncos. One came in at number 36. Now, it's the top players in the NFL, okay? According to Pro Football Focus, Bryce Callahan is the 36th best player in the NFL. They said, quote, Callahan may be the most underrated player in the league. An undersized slot corner by trade, he was asked to moonlight on the outside as a perimeter corner multiple times last season due to injuries in the Denver secondary. He didn't just hold up. He continued to thrive. Callahan allowed a passer rating of 47 in his coverage in 2020, the best mark in the NFL, Pro Football Focus wrote. Quote, he didn't allow a touchdown or even a completion longer than 19 yards all season, despite playing outside of his natural position for extended periods of time. If he can back up that kind of performance, he will remain one of the best players in the league at any position, end quote.
I thought Bryce Callahan was really good last year when he played. That was the problem, though. When he played, he just wasn't healthy. So his entire first year in Denver, 2019, he missed the whole season with the foot. Last year, what did he play last year, 10 games?
He did.
I thought he was good. He had the big pick. Jeez, which game was that? Was that the Miami game? No, it was the Chargers game. He started the comeback where Justin Herbert threw the pick in the end zone.
Yes.
If they convert there, even if they get a field goal there,
it's over.
That game's the route,
yeah.
Right?
Yep.
So he kept the Broncos in the game. That was as much of a turning point as Philip Lindsay's 57-yard touchdown. It was huge. So he made some plays. He was good. And so I do think he's underrated from that standpoint, but is he a 36th best player in the league? That seems a bit high. Just like a couple of years ago when they had Alexander Johnson is what, 49 or something like that?
Yeah, he's like 41.
Yeah, that's a bit of a stretch. I do like Bryce Callahan, but I think there's some revisionist history there. This whole his natural position's in the slot. At the beginning of last year, before injuries hit, Vic Fangio kept telling us Bryce Callahan was going to be on the outside. We kept hearing that. It was Bryce Callahan and A.J. Boye. They were the guys. Everybody kept saying, but he's a slot guy. That's his natural position. Why aren't they going to put him in there? I don't know why they weren't. I don't know why, Ed Donatell and Vic Fangio were doing that. But to say he was just moved because of injuries, I think that's a little bit of a false statement.
Yeah, I just don't think, and you hit it right out of the gate, you can't tell me that any player is the 36th best player in the National Football League if I don't know, if it's a coin flip whether you're suited up or not.
Is he a top 10 Bronco? And I ask that question honestly. Like, to me, Justin Simmons has got to make this list. I think we went round and round on Von Miller and Bradley Chubb, and they both have injury issues. Garrett Bowles makes this list. Cortland Sutton, when he's healthy, could make this list. Like, is Bryce Callahan one of the top 10 Broncos? Probably, but
I think
debatable.
It comes with such a caveat. Because when he's out there, like, my eyes told me when he was on the field for those 10 games, he conclusively was a top 10 Bronco. I'll take it one further, and I told Stokely this a month or two ago. I thought when he was out there, he, along with Justin Simmons, were the best defensive players that the Broncos had.
I wouldn't disagree with that.
But when he was out there, he's played 10 games in the last 2 years total. The year before that, he missed time in Chicago. That was when he was, that was a 2018 season. He missed a quarter of the season in 2017. He missed another 5 games in 2016 and missed seven games in 2015. Like, there is no example, even like Ronald Darby, right? Ronald Darby gets brought in here, former second round pick to Buffalo, bounced around a little bit. At least you can say, yes, with a real complicated injury history, at least you can point to a season where he's played 16 games, and that just so happens to be the most recent season. Is that a one-off? We'll see. But with Callahan, there is no season that you could point to. And, in fact, he missed the most number of games this past year. Well, I guess you got to count 2019 didn't play at all. the most games going back to his rookie season. So I just, like, availability is such a huge component of professional football that I just don't think it's fair to include him in this list when you got 10 games played in the last 2 years.
Yeah, I mean, if he was in a different free agent class, people would be just up in arms that they've gotten 10 games out of this guy on, what, a three-year, $33 million deal, something like that. They've gotten 10 games out of him in 2 years. Now, the reason it's not is because he was in the same free agent class. Was he in the Juwan James class, right? So Juwan gives us 63 snaps and then zero. So the fact that Bryce Callahan was zero games and then 10 games kind of gets overlooked because there's somebody else who played just a preposterously low number that was in that same group. But, yeah, that's just, you know, when you come in here as a big free agent signing and you've played 10 games out of 32, yeah, I feel bad for you that you got hurt and that you had the screw in your foot break during camp, and that's unfortunate. But that's also just unacceptable. Like, that's just that's part of the reason this team has been in the situation they've been for the last 4 years in particular is just too many guys that have broken down and been unable to be on the field to contribute. Juwan James is a good player, too. He was fine during his 63 snaps. There's just, you know, it needed to be, what, 10 times that? So that's the issue with Bryce Callahan that certainly would prevent me from putting him on this list at all for Pro Football Focus. Certainly not the 36th best player in the league. That seems preposterous.
Like, if you were – how about this? If you were going to draft the whole league right now, if the whole league, no player belongs to any team – and you're going to draft the entire league from scratch. Does Bryce Callahan go 36th? Of course
no.
He doesn't. He doesn't go 136th.
He's the fourth pick in the second round? No. Absolutely not.
Right, when you say it like that, right, it does kind of seem silly.
Absolutely not.
Well, he was not the only Bronco listed on this list. I just told you that he was number 36. And again, this list has only gone down to 21. They'll release presumably the final two installments from 20 to 19, and then do the top 10. There was another Bronco who came in at number 23 on this list. James, you have a guess who it is?
I'm going to go Justin Simmons.
It was Justin Simmons.
Okay. I don't have an issue with that one.
He landed number 23 on this list. They said, quote, Simmons is a free safety for the Broncos. But he can impact far more plays than most free safeties throughout the NFL. Pro Football Focus went on to say he has notched 28 defensive stops over the last two seasons, a top 11 figure in each season, and almost every player ranked ahead of him is primarily a box safety by trade. Simmons is the highest graded safety in the NFL since the start of the 2019 season, end quote.
Yeah, no, he's a very good player. We've had the conversation for a couple of years about whether or not he should get a long-term contract. And heading into 2020, I was with Stoke from the standpoint of, you know, he's a really good player, but is he great? Is he the highest paid safety in football? Is he, you know, a game changer? And I was saying, no, I don't think he's shown me enough of those kind of plays to warrant a big long-term commitment. But in 2020, he did much more of that. He had the pick to seal the game against the Dolphins. He just seemed to be, you know, there were games where you'd be like, man, 31 was just all over the field.
Yep.
And that's, you know, hard to measure on the stat sheet. It's just the old eye test. And he was that way this past year. So I was fine with George Payton giving him the big deal. I think he's a guy that, you know, you draft in the third round, you develop him. If you're not going to give him a long-term contract, I'm not sure who you're going to. He grades out well, whether it's Pro Football Focus, whether it's Pro Bowl votes, whether it's all pro teams.
Yep.
He checks all those boxes. So, you know, right now he's probably he's the best player on the roster. Yeah. I mean, that doesn't mean he has the highest upside, but I think right now he's the best player on the Broncos roster.
I think that's fair. I honestly think that's fair. Yeah.
Might be why they're coming off a 5-11 year.
You know, that's part of it too, because he's a safety, right? And I'm not sure if you ever want your safety being your best player. And that's not anything to do with Justin Simmons really at all. That has to do with, you know, just the position, right? If the safety, and unless you're a generational future Hall of Famer, and I'm not sure Justin Simmons is in that territory.
He's not Ed Reed. Right.
No,
he's not that kind of a safety where, you know, and I get it. There's, you know, box safety and who's playing free safety and who's doing all these different things. But he's just not that kind of impact player. And typically speaking, you would want your best player to be a quarterback, a pass rusher, maybe a left tackle. But if it's your left tackle, you're probably Joe Thomas and you're the Browns and you're drafting high, you know, near the top every year. So it's just an odd spot to have it because it's, you know, it's hard to make a huge impact from that spot game after game after game. But he's a very, very good player. You know what? I think he's made the leap to where you can say he's a great player at this point. He is.
Yeah, I think so. I think that's fair.
Miss any of Stokely and Zach? Make sure to subscribe to our on-demand podcast. You'll get every episode as soon as they're released. Just subscribe wherever you get your podcasts or at 1043thefan.com.